Sandy Sunday, Sunday, April 21st, began gray and threatening rain like the day before, and my heart sank. Lucy and Jane and Charlie Engelhard went to 9 o'clock Mass at Father Schneider's church. What a variety of visitors he's seeing these days. But everybody else stayed in their rooms for a leisurely breakfast and reading the paper. While Bess and I got weather reports and worried indecisively over a fish fry at the lake or lunch here at home. I walked up to the Cedar House to see John and Peter Loeb.
Yes.
C.R., an early riser, had already made his way down to the big house, and together we walked back down past the grove of live oaks with me pointing out where we always had the barbecues for the visiting chiefs of state. I have never seen Texas so green. I could sing about it every blessed moment, and the skies were lightening. By the time we returned, it was, as often the case, Lyndon who made the decision. Sure, let's go on out to the lake. If it rains, we'll just eat in the house. Okay. And so Bess and I reversed gears, got the kitchen started on the fish fry routine, and I sent out a call for everybody that wanted to join me on a helicopter ride to see more country. Lyndon stayed to work at his desk, and later to go to St. Barnabas with Linda, just the two of them, which in itself is a special satisfaction to me. And about 11, I boarded the helicopter with C.R. and Mary and Andre and John and Peter Loeb and Charles and Jane Engelhard and Bess, with the skies lightening every minute, and we arrived at the West Ranch, landed on this trip, and cars were already there, and the next hour and a half was sheer enchantment. The hills were a sea, a carpet of bluebonnets, and sometimes there would be a meadow that was a Mille Fleur design of bluebonnets and white Mexican poppies and wine cups and yellow flowers and pink phlox. Peter Loeb had a camera and the Engelhards. Of course, we had brought along the White House cameraman behind us. All the streams were full, the prettiest sight any rancher ever sees. We stopped at one, clear fresh water running over the gray-pink granite boulders, and everybody explored. We found a big green lizard about a foot long, looking like he was left over from prehistoric times. There were literally herds of deer, and every now and then they would vault over the stone fences in succession like a ballet, and I told them the story of the stone fences. Yeah. And then we stopped at one of my very favorite places, Stone Corral by a stream that is bordered with cypress trees. And one part of the corral encloses an outcropping of sheer granite. It's always puzzled me. I cannot understand why any farmer or rancher would want a pen whose floor was hard rock. The amount of man-hours, sweat, and toil left here in this old homestead is a romance and a sadness to me. We took reams of pictures, and at every exclamation, my smile got wider. They loved my country. Mm-hmm. Jane said, "This is going to give Mary Lasker ideas. She never thinks plantings are big enough." And here the Lord had planted a whole world as far as your eyes could see with bright stretches of flowers. Mm-hmm. And somebody laughingly said, "Yes, next year, instead of 1 million daffodil bulbs, we'll have to get 5 million. There was one incredibly perfect spot, a pink granite boulder, and behind it a mound that was solidly covered with bluebonnets. And so, singly and in groups, we all stood and were photographed. And I was thinking what albums I would have to send as a memory of this weekend. But I knew Lyndon would join us before long. So we went on to the Haywood, and the landing spot there itself was a banner of blue and gold and pink. Out on the terrace, the Filipinos already had the table set with red checkered cloths, and Bess had straw baskets and was collecting wildflowers, and Jane immediately set to work helping her. Mary and I took a walk down through the subdivision. A good many of the lots have now been sold. Not a thing has been built. A.W. deftly but firmly puts me off in my hope that a part of it can be retained as a sort of a common park for all of the homes there. And since I do not invest 1 hour of my time trying to help sell the lots and pay the indebtedness, I do not feel I can enforce my wish on the management of it. Linda and Linda joined us about one, and the Crims came in with the Mashmans in that tiny little bubble of a helicopter, and I asked the Mashmans to stay for lunch. Mm-hmm. And Lyndon abducted some of the men. I think he wanted to have a talk with John Loeb. And they went for a ride in the speedboat, and the rest of us settled on the terrace, I told them about my plan someday to light these lovely crooked old live oak trees imaginatively. Even so, and as casually as we live here, with paper plates and very sketchy housekeeping, it has a great charm. It must have been 2 o'clock when we finally had lunch. James had fried the fish out on the terrace, and we had a huge pot of black-eyed peas and slaw and fresh tomatoes, and Mary's delicious hot cornbread. Okay. A very plebeian meal for these New Yorkers, I'm sure. But then, all of today was out of character for them. After lunch, Lyndon took some of the ladies in the speedboat. Peter Loeb was particularly anxious to go. And then we divided up between the Krems' little bubble of a helicopter. John kept on saying it would be just the thing for him to commute between his home and office in, and the big chopper and a car. As I remember, I, as one of the least adventurous, chose to go in a car and ask Andre and Linda and Bess to go with me, and we all converged on the Krem Ranch. What a funny sight. Here on this lonely hilltop, the house with its weathered board and batting and cedar-shaped shingle roof has already mellowed into the landscape as though it's been there for 100 years. The rail fence and the windmill and 3 helicopters, 2 of them bearing the seal of the President of the United States. Everybody fell in love with the Krem House. I wish sometime we would get some more neighbors from these visits. I know where I shall return with all my heart. I also know I shall miss the good conversation, the competition, the excitement of people like Mary and Andre and the Loebs and the Engelharts and C.R. The ladies, of course, had a conducted tour, and I was proud of Tony's things that we saw, especially the old wooden chest. And there was much teasing about the presidential suite. Actually, it sounds like Matilda is going to take the big garage, which they never use, build a huge picture window in one end, add a bathroom, and make it into a room which she will call Lyndon's very own. Jane and Charles had set 4:30 as departure time for New York. We were a little behind schedule, that most tyrannical word in my life. But we actually back at the ranch by 4:30. Then the guests quickly gathered their suitcases and changed clothes, and Lyndon and I took them out to the runway a little past 5, and jokingly remarked to Charles as he looked at the 6 flags painted on his plane, that after January, we were going to have to put some more flags on the plane. There had been 30 painted on another plane, which he had traded in before he bought this one a few months ago. We'd asked CR to stay with us. Everyone else left, and I believe with all my heart that they had had a good time. I know myself, I had never enjoyed more showing our country to friends, nor ever was it prettier. Are the guests more interesting and responsive? There's a special luxury in the time right after a party ends, or any period of responsibility, no matter how much you may have enjoyed it. And so Lyndon and I, CR, had gone down to the Cedar House, feeling quite relaxed and, for myself, aimless, rode around. I had talked to Betty Weinheimer this morning about the possibility of taking our children and returning with us to Washington tomorrow for a special children-oriented sightseeing tour. And then this evening, I talked to Jewel, expecting to take her at a later time because I knew the diplomatic reception and a state dinner coming up, the house would be crammed to the gills. As it turned out, once more, it was Lyndon who settled things and said, on Monday morning, "No, you just take Jewel now, too. There'll never be another time. You can find room somewhere in that house." A little before 7, we choppered over to the Morrison Ranch, and the Krems were there, too, for dinner. Bess, bless her, having finished all her duties, and wonderfully, because she was the author of all the grace and precision, the flowers and meal planning and seating, and all the real hostess duties, while it was Mary who did the bulk of the work, and I who simply enjoyed it. Bess had left to go to San Antonio as a guest of the Steves to see Tennis Fair. Nevertheless, something must have taken a toll of me these past weeks or days. And how can I speak of work when it is Lyndon who has worked so hard? But it was he who thought to call CR and have him join us at the Morsons for dinner. We drove around while the last ray of light lasted. I shall spend this spring like a miser. And then we came in to a big hearty dinner, and then the men naturally gravitated to the domino table. Nita and Melvin were there, and there began one of those lengthy battle of skill and words. And about 10 o'clock, I said to C.R. that you and I might just drive home. We did, and luckily, because I think it was very, very late indeed, well after 1 o'clock when Lyndon came in. And barely half awake, I heard him.